Good morning, Europe. Good evening, USA. I guess for some of you there, it's early dawn on the East Coast. This is Joaquin Flores, the geopolitical analyst, looking at the information war primarily. Information war is everything. I'm going to look at a few questions, but it's better to ask what's happening now and what has happened than to ask what will happen. What will happen are too many possible outcomes, and we have exhausted this question a lot. Please refer to prior materials. There are too many possible outcomes. It would become a tedious list to enumerate all of the possible outcomes. The more you know, the less you try to forecast. I don't speak from my preferences or the things that I'd like to see happen. I speak from a long list of possible outcomes. And myself, standing alone, when I engage in contingency planning on questions of counterinsurgency and color revolutions, I don't stand alone. I'm working with teams of people that have a lot of more specialization and insights. I'm a generalist, and specialists really fill in a lot of things I would need to know. And you might, from a group of 5 or 10 working group, isolated from another group doing the same that we don't interact with, to avoid Abilene paradox, groupthink, we would come up with a list of possible outcomes. First, we would have to agree on the model that we would use to come up with that list of possible outcomes. And then it would just be, this is what this model says are the list of possible outcomes. Does that make sense? So, what will happen? It's too complicated. But what is happening is probably, and what has happened, is a whole universe of possibilities and right in there. There's so many things to learn about what has happened that will inform your own kind of best judgment about things that will happen. Because whenever I'm asked what will happen, it's really a conversation about what has happened and then projecting that forward. Let me know that I'm coming through. Let me know that you can hear me. So I think the first very good question is about Poland. People really want to know about Poland right now. And this is really about sending signals to Russia. And you have to think about what are the possibilities and what are the things that would happen, right? What does Poland get from this? Well, that's assuming that Poland has rational actors and they're in a very difficult strategic position. You have to understand the Polish mindset. We've talked a lot about Ukraine and Kuchma. We've talked a lot about how they developed a version of critical race theory to make Ukrainians the permanent victims. And that this victimhood justifies their actions. Because, as you know, when a person feels that they're the victims, that justifies all sorts of horrors in the name of revenge or justice, really blurs the lines between those two concepts. Whereas justice is proportionate to the proven grievances, revenge is driven by emotions and can be vastly disbalanced to even the purported grievances. That's one of the problems in the Ukrainian mentality that's been propagated in official institutions from 5-year-olds all the way up to what types of doctoral theses are approved in the humanities and history. So, but what about Poland? Well, a lot of my knowledge on this, and it's not much, is based on Jay Farnold, I used to work with, and he had a very good analysis, and I'll share it, was that the Ukrainian mentality, sorry, the Polish mentality and how they view history is, instead of looking at what is and what was, they look at things through the lens of what could have been. And anyone who understands the problems with alternative reality creation, anyone who understands the problems with counterfactual history, understands that each time you go back to try to say what could have been, it only begs the question of why what happened was, in fact, what happened. Because if you understand history from a logical, rational perspective, then you understand that everything that happened is built upon an unbreakable chain of causation through time. It's all like butterfly wings. You know, every single event that had happened was a particle of the reality that emerged from all of those events, and they're built up on top of each other. And so you can see already the absurd philosophical idealism and anti-rationalism built into the Polish mentality. They look at history through the lens of what could have been if we had done this. And so they look at the problems of their dictatorship in the 30s, and they think that the mistake that was made is that their military dictatorship did not instantly make a military alliance with Hitler's dictatorship, with the Third Reich, and just instantly incorporate into the Third Reich early on, before the so-called Hitler-Stalin non-aggression agreement, Ribbentrop-Molotov agreement. And that is the lens through which they see. So you really begin to understand Eastern European mentality and how they misperceive Europe, and which themes have been promoted in actual Eastern Europe, former Warsaw and former Soviet Eastern Europe, through their channels of media, their media industrial complex, through the private sector, and also through the Radio Liberty, Radio Free Europe, Voice of America network. They promote a different vision of Europe, of Western Europe, than Western Europe promotes to the rest of the world and to the US. And this leads to a lot of confusion because they end up fighting in their minds for a Europe which doesn't exist. Just like they view history through the lens of what could have been instead of why what happened happened and why what happened was the only way it could have happened. I hope this is making sense. I really hope this is making sense. Because we're really talking about what the Polish leadership is prepared to do. That's really, really the question. We're really here to talk about deep subjects. What will happen next is almost an irrelevant, impossible question. And it really begs the question of what is the mentality, what is the collective worldview of the players involved? If you want to know where Poland is at in their collective mentality, if they are about to enter into this conflict, this is how you understand it. And Mr. Arnold's ideas have greatly informed mine. And again, I'm not even adequate or conversant on Poland. And yet, what I'm saying is true, which should be humbling for all of us. And in many ways, Poland views the European Union as a type of Fourth Reich that they want to be a part of, because the lesson they learned is that what should have been was that they should have joined the Third Reich, and that would have avoided the partition of Poland and all of these things. All of these things that even resulted in how they view the loss of parts of Poland to Russia, effectively, to the Soviet Union. This is a very interesting question. As my colleague Tim Kirby likes to talk about, it's been floated in Russian circles, serious Russian circles, academic, geopolitical. The level of discourse on geopolitical analytics in the Russian and Eastern European world generally, while there's a lot of editorializing and emotion and fantastical broad overtures to events spanning 1,000 years, on the other hand, it's also much more rigorous, much more in-depth. When you read the New York Times or The Economist or the Financial Times, Newsweek, Time, This is the extent. What, maybe Foreign Policy or Brookings Institute? When you read this stuff, it reads like it's written by mental midgets. It reads like it's written by someone who got into university because their parents had money, but they spent that time on drugs, relying on trust funds and letters by influential family members to get them their positions, because that's exactly what has happened in the American system. And yes, that happens in all systems, and we tend to be sensitive to seeing it when we notice it. It happens in Poland, it happens in Russia, it happens in Japan. But the extent that it happens in the US is ridiculous. It's pervasive. In fact, it's the rule more than the exception that stands out and bothers you. And that's because the empire of lies in the US has driven honest and really rigorous critical thinkers. Maybe on some of my best and brightest days, I fit in that category, but it's driven people who actually make serious analysis. It precludes them in the first place from even taking an interest in participating in possible employment by any of these journalistic or analytic institutions or think tanks. They're very poor. Very, very poor. And the US has no experts of its own on foreign policy matters, which is highly, highly informative, considering that the US empire has a view of foreign policy, which is its dominant view. It's the most important thing. Hello, baby. Oh, you're not feeling well, huh? Come here. No? What do you want? What's going on? Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. So, my daughter is ill and she's getting better, but she's fussy. So anyway, the Polish mentality is based on what was and what could have been. Sorry, what could have been and not what was. They look at what was as a bizarre aberration instead of the logical outcome of the same Polish mentality, which keeps producing the same disastrous results, is the final point there. And so the dangerous thing about the Polish position, and this is where we're going with this, is the dangerous thing is that they viewed their hesitance and reluctance to quickly make an overture and deal with the Third Reich early on, prior to the non-aggression pact between Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union regarding and the division of and the partition of Poland, they view that as really the crisis. So, and they think they should have been with Hitler right away. And now, therefore, all of this talk about Poland going into the regions of Ukraine that were controlled by Poland for some time before later events in the 20th century, they view that as an opportunity to regain this. And that's why I mentioned Tim Kirby, who's been saying that it's Russia that should negotiate the deal with Poland on these territories, because they could actually guarantee them. Whereas if Poland goes into these territories to partition the Western Ukraine under an opposing stance to an opposing stance that frustrates the Russian endeavor invasion into Ukraine, then this could be disastrous for Poland, because then you have hostilities between the two states. And then a third possibility, of course, is, and this assumes a high degree of sophistication from the Polish establishment, which may not exist, which is the real crisis. Because if they were brilliant, if the Polish leadership were truly brilliant, they would go in to the regions of Western Ukraine under the auspices and pretext of a NATO move. But once settled in, they would ultimately flip their orientation to quote unquote neutral and be a part of a partitioning of a semi-autonomous region that is effectively part of Poland and guaranteed by Russia. That's that they were truly brilliant. And there's a historical precedent for this not that long ago when Yeltsin was still technically in power in Russia and Russia was technically an ally. Yeltsin Russia was technically an ally of Bill Clinton's United States. But in fact, Putin had already taken control of the newly established FSB and had loyalty within the former international KGB and military GRU. These operate under different names at different times, so we just throw them all in. Things had been established and abolished throughout, but we just use these terms to give you an idea. It's always complicated in the 90s to talk about these things. The personalities involved and the names of these organizations changed once or twice or three times. So, but Putin was coming to power, and it was off the radar screen of the Western powers because he was approved by the same structures that were involved in the destruction of the USSR. So when Russia goes into Yugoslavia, they do so as part of this Western alliance, but they initiated it in an uninvited way, claiming that they're helping the US peacekeeping efforts, but in fact it resulted in the Russian forces going north into Belgrade, which that day forced the stop of the US bombing of Belgrade. So they went in as a self-declared alliance partner to the US peacekeeping, so-called peacekeeping, that's what they always call it, yeah? I don't use those words. I don't call Russian forces in Ukraine peacekeepers. I don't believe in the bastardization of language, no matter who uses it. But anyway, you can see how this dynamic plays out. That would be a way, if there was some hermetically sealed genius operator that was really interested in Polish sovereignty inside of these Polish intelligence and military institutions, then Poland could totally realize their long-term territorial ambitions and come back. And it would fit in with their narrative it would fit in with this narrative of what could have been without going on a suicide mission for the Fourth Reich. Why do we say that? Because in this mental deficiency, in this collective psychosis of the Polish mentality, in their historical revisionism, by looking at history through the lens of what could have been, they don't properly analyze why what happened happened. And the reason that Polish leadership at that time in the 30s didn't make just the first alliance with Russia from the beginning is because it would have simply led to the annihilation of Poland by the Soviet Union much earlier on. And it only would have meant that that theater in World War II would have begun sooner. That's all. And it would have, you know, both Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union, we're recreating too many historical factors that would become too imprecise too quickly, because that's That's the problem with historical counter-narratives. Rather, look at the reasons behind the Polish leadership's decisions in the 30s at the time and what they thought would happen to understand why what happened is in fact what happened. But I think still through that deficiency, there's the possibility for Poland to pull a hat trick out of this, and they could score several goals, but only if they deceive their Western partners and get out of their present role in NATO. That's a very tall order, but these are very exciting times. And crazier things have happened in the past based on more sure-footed alliances than NATO. NATO is structured in such a way, actually quite rationally, and there's been an increasing drive to make NATO irrational. But the rational part of NATO, which is often swept under the carpet by the modern contemporary proponents of NATO, when they speak such ludicrous things like an attack on a NATO country is an automatic war or an automatic attack on all NATO countries, that is a lie. The rationality of NATO, what made NATO work, is that it is not automatic. The country that's attacked, first of all, there has to be some idea that the reason for their attack was in connection with a NATO mission. You can't just have all these dozens of countries involved and any one of them could draw in the whole alliance into a war just because you get some defective government or a crazy irrational error or even a rationally made error to enter into a conflict. That doesn't draw everyone in. That's not how NATO works. The country that is attacked has to file with the NATO High Command an Article 5 motion, and then the High Command has to agree that they will respond to that invoking of the Article 5 on the committal of all NATO forces. I mean, this is what's prevented. How else could you have countries like Turkey and Greece both be in NATO? Just there's so many things that how else did Russia has already had military entanglements with NATO via Turkey in the Syrian war just yesterday in the scheme of things, just a few years ago. There were dogfights between Turkish and Russian aircraft and absolutely, Russian forces were bombing Turkish military in Syria. So there's a pretext for this. Think about that. They already went in. Russian attack planes and bombers already attacked a NATO country when it was operating in a non-NATO country, Syria. So while the situation of Syria and Ukraine are very different, that framework is not different. That general dynamic that we're explaining is not different at all. And by that framework, just keep in mind that those Turkish forces were operating as advisors, experts, technicians, and they were there blended in with the FSA, we call it the TFSA, the Turkish FSA, the Turkish Free Syrian Army. They were the ones with the black, white, and green flag with the red stars on it. Those were basically Turkish forces proxy. And could Poland have something similar? See, that's really more how they might try to enter into Ukraine is another, you know, iteration of this, is in that kind of way. How would they manage that is what we're talking about. How could they pull some other outcome out? So those are my thoughts on Poland getting into there. I'm gonna stop here, because I think that's the most interesting question that's on everyone's mind right now. And I may have more thoughts on it later, but that's how I'm gonna end it right now. Okay, thanks. Goodbye.